Hello and a warm welcome to the debate on Press TV. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. The second day of the Manama so-called Peace to Prosperity workshop, focusing on the economic part of President Trump's deal of the century, has come to an end. President Trump claims that a proposal is aimed at addressing the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Palestinians unanimously boycotted the event, questioning its credibility. The PLO rejected the $50 billion U.S. economic plan for the Palestinians. It says the proposal lacks a political vision, which will push it to failure. White House advisor Jared Kushner says, while closing the Manama event a few hours ago, that the door remains open to Palestinians to engage in the U.S. Mideast peace plan. What's Washington trying to achieve by pushing the controversial proposal? Is the so-called deal of the century a prescription to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict once and for all, or does it aim to liquidate the Palestinian cause? Before discussing such questions, we're joined by our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, to tell us more about the Palestinians' reaction to Washington's proposal. Mona, over to you.
Well, good evening. As you were saying, again, the Palestine Liberation Organization today said in a press conference that the PLO will continue working with international personnel toward achieving Palestinian rights under the framework of the international law, and again rejected the American mediation and the so-called deal of the century, as well as the workshop being held in Manama. There was a press conference for Dr. Hanan Ashrawi, member of the PLO's executive committee, saying that Trump administration has already disqualified itself from any credible role in peacemaking. From the first moment, Palestinians expressed their rejection of this workshop. They didn't attend it, they opposed it, and they called on the Arab states attending this workshop to change their mind and not to be in that conference. The PLO again is calling on the international community in order to act with required courage, according to the PLO, and integrity to defend Palestinian rights. Palestinians are asking how come the American administration would be, let's say, speaking about Palestinian rights at the same time the Trump administration stopped all aid to the shut first of all the PLO's office in Washington, then moved its embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem Al-Quds, and considered Jerusalem Al-Quds to be the capital of the Israeli regime, and at the same time stopped all aid to the only UN agency providing support to the Palestinian refugees, as well as cutting aid to the Palestinians. All what the American administration is doing is strengthening Israeli occupation of the Palestinian lands and taking rights from the Palestinians, and making open relations between the Arab states and the occupation regime.
Thank you for that. Mona Kandil, our correspondent, joining us from Ramallah. Now, to start the debate, I'm joined by Charles Ortel, political analyst out of New York, and also Richard Becker, author of Palestine, Israel, and the U.S. Empire, rejoining us out of San Francisco. Great to see you both, gentlemen. Beginning with Charles, Jared Kushner says, and I'm quoting him, that Palestinians don't have a great track record of getting a deal done, so I'll keep doing it in the way we want to do it. Now, is this deal making or imposing a deal?
Well, I think, you know, trying to speak clinically about the long history of missed expectations and dashed hopes involving the Palestinian people, looking over decades of history, you have to say that the leadership of the Palestinian people, whoever you claim that may be, has not been effective in advancing the interests of the Palestinians. And here you have, in theory, a deal of the century being offered, and the Palestinian leadership decides across the board they don't even want to attend a conference. So there comes a point where rational people look at a problem and say, you know, maybe there's no point in trying to solve it. People don't show up at meetings. You're holding a $50 billion carrot out there. $50 billion is a lot of money. It may not seem like a lot of money to certain people, but it is an enormous amount of money. why should American taxpayers and others contribute $50 billion to help the Palestinian people if they don't even want to help themselves? I mean, there comes a point where rational people look at this mess and say, maybe the people who are claimed to be representing the Palestinians want them to be living a miserable life so they can continue the negotiations forever.
All right, Richard Pecker, do Palestinians want to live a miserable life?
Well, of course, that explanation is the pro-Israeli racist, profoundly racist rationale. What's really being offered to the Palestinians is some bribes if they'll give up their struggle for self-determination and liberation. Jared Kushner is a dangerous, racist, colonialist clown. When you have someone like him saying, Trump, the Palestinians have no reason not to trust Trump. I mean, you can't come up with a more ridiculous statement than that. Trump has moved the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem in defiance of the Palestinians. He has, Trump has recognized the illegal seizure of the Golan Heights, the annexation, the illegal annexation of the Golan Heights, cut off aid to the Palestinians through UNRWA, to Palestinian refugees. And we're supposed to think there's no reason for the Palestinians not to trust Trump. I mean, that's what makes Kushner really a clown. But he's a dangerous clown in that he has behind him the power of the most powerful country on the earth today, the United States and the Trump administration, which neither Trump nor Kushner, Jason Greenblatt, David Friedman, the ambassador, U.S. ambassador, none of them have the slightest interest in the concerns of the Palestinian people or the interests of the Palestinian people. They're all lined up behind the Israeli government right now, supporting the Israeli government, and really just offering the Palestinians something they know that the Palestinians could not possibly accept, that is surrendering their national rights for a mess of pottage, as has often been used.
Now, Charles, Richard just raised my second question I was going to put to you, and that is the fact that U.S. President's son-in-law, Kushner, says that Palestinians have no reason not to trust President Trump. And a short while ago, even U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo cast doubt on the proposal being acceptable to anyone. The question is, what has made Palestinians lose their trust in Mr. Trump?
I mean, I can't speak for the Palestinians, and I think we should draw a distinction between the Palestinian people and the leadership that purports to represent the interests of the Palestinian people. I can't point to any Palestinian leaders that can validly lay claim to any kind of meaningful success through the long period of this struggle. So let's not conflate the people with the leadership. I think they're two very different things. As to whether you can trust Jared Kushner or not, I think Jared Kushner is a young man who has accomplished a lot. He was raised in fortunate circumstances. This is a monumental problem. Nobody has been able to solve it yet. So I don't think we should expect an instant solution to this kind of very difficult set of problems. On the other hand, reasonable people do get to a place where they say, at a certain point, why should we bother trying anymore? If people are inclined just to struggle forever, to pay lip service to the idea of attaining a solution, maybe we've got better things that we should do where we can actually make a meaningful difference and arrive at a lasting solution.
But Charles, does it make a difference to you personally? You don't care who is sitting, who is sponsoring that deal? Good intentions, good faith, bad faith, nothing matters?
Are you asking me now?
Yes. Yeah, because you were talking about your questioning Palestinians.
Yeah,
why they didn't take part.
Personally, I think we have to say that the United States is investing a tremendous amount of time and energy and has done so under Republican presidents, under Democratic presidents, and it is a noble goal to try to achieve a lasting peace. I would remind your listeners and viewers that the first foreign trip that this president took was to three corners of this conflict, to Saudi Arabia, to Israel, and to the Vatican to say that this president is not serious about achieving a lasting peace, I think is an absurd comment, frankly. And on the other hand, I would say that the reaction of the Palestinians is going to, if it's endlessly going to reject any, and of Iran, frankly, any attempts to forge a lasting peace, I think the American people across the political spectrum, those who vote, are going to start looking at this and saying, you know, we have ever declining interest in supporting multilateral organizations that don't regulate themselves, that are not serious about solving problems, that just want to wallow in misery to perpetuate the rationale to have these multilateral organizations.
Richard, I want you to clarify two points that Charles made, and that is one, that he differentiates Palestinian leadership, and he believes that necessarily they do not echo what the people think. Whereas we had some rallies in all Palestinian cities almost, in the West Bank, Ramallah, elsewhere, Palestinian people were out there protesting the deal. They say, we don't want to sell Palestine. That's what they believe. Let's have your comments, and also that Palestinians are not looking for a lasting peace. That's why they haven't attended that meeting, as Charles put it.
Every Palestinian organization across the board, whether they were socialist, nationalist, Islamist, or none of the above, but all Palestinian organizations have condemned the meeting in Bahrain and have condemned the so-called deal of the century, which is not a deal for anyone except for Israel and the United States and the reactionary Arab regimes that are part of this plot against the Palestinians. And it is a real plot. It's to put an end, it's to liquidate the Palestinian national movement. That's what the real objective is. And the idea that the Palestinians have refused to make peace is ludicrous. After the Oslo Accord in 1993, Israel broke every successive date of implementation of the next step in those talks. I covered it all through that period of time. There was no question about that. It was a matter of stalling, and then once Netanyahu got in, was to prevent any going forward at all with the Oslo Accord. Not that the Oslo Accord, I necessarily believe, would have really led anywhere, but Israel blocked it time after time, to the extent that in 2008, and this was revealed in the Palestine Papers, in the negotiations, Saeb Erekat, the leading Palestinian negotiator, said to Tzipi Livni, who was then the foreign minister of Israel and presiding over the talks on their side, he said to her, we concede everything that you, all your demands, borders, who controls the water, the settlements can stay, all that. And her response was very interesting. She said, well, we know that it's probably hard for you to say, but that doesn't meet our needs. And what are our needs in that case? The real needs, what the Israeli government is really seeking, is to drive out the remaining Palestinians, or if they're going to stay, to deprive them of any citizenship rights. So what Israel is aiming to do is to annex the West Bank, or very large parts of it, and to subjugate the rest of it. And the plan that Kushner, a man who has achieved nothing on his own, was born with a very big silver spoon, what he's proposing is that that be allowed. And that's the next phase of this accord. And that is why the Palestinians across the board, have rejected this plan, because they know it's meant to liquidate their movement.
Now, Charles and Richard, let's turn attention to social media, because, you know, the social media have been inundated with lots of opinions over the past 2 days about this U.S.-sponsored conference that was held in Bahrain in order to promote Washington's so-called deal of the century. Here are some of the ideas shared on Twitter.
We, the Palestinians around the world, reject the deal of the century, and we say no to the Bahrain Economic Conference.
The puppets of the global capitalists, America and allies, have blocked the accounts of sovereign countries around the world, especially those with oil assets like Iran, simply to pour their own money and be in full control. This is the real going with the deal of the century.
We will say it together out loud, no to the deal of the century. Nobody has the right to determine the Palestinian people's future. They can call it a peace plan or whatsoever, but truth is it's a plan that aims to dismantle what's left of Palestine.
Trump's deal of the century fails to address the most significant barrier to economic development, Israeli abuses of Palestinians' human rights. Money won't buy Palestinians.
Bahrain Foreign Minister to Times of Israel. Israel is here to stay, and we want peace with it. Khalid bin Ahmad Al Khalifa says Manama conference could be game-changer like the Israel-Egypt Camp David Accords, urges Israeli leaders to talk to them about the Arab Peace Initiative.
I guarantee that there's not one single person in that room who cares more about human rights of anyone, let alone the Palestinians this conference is supposedly about, than their own self-enrichment. Guarantee.
Well, there were some comments on Twitter. Now let's turn back to our own discussion. Okay, let me ask Charles Washington saying that it's offering a purely economic solution to the Palestinian economic problems, you know, $56 billion, as you also mentioned. Now, Palestinians argue that they don't want an economy without a political solution in the first place. Which aspect must be given priority, the political issues or the economic ones?
Well, you know, I comment on politics and economics, but my training is really in investing in capitalism and finance. And I think what the people of Palestine seem to me to lack most is the foundation of hope for a truly prosperous future, and that is private sector jobs selling goods and services onto the local and global market that truly have a positive and impactful benefit on society. I don't see that kind of base inside Palestine, the territory of Palestine. And so, you know, without that, it's very difficult to think clearly about a structure where the people living there are going to have a productive future. For them, I think it's been a choice, frankly, between agony and misery. And that's, you're going to take misery over agony, but what you should really want is prosperity. And a $50 billion program to try to put real businesses and real private sector jobs into that economy, that would might make sense. But on the other hand, if the political leadership, and those would be people in the political parties as well as these organizations, is just dead set against finding a solution, then, you know, maybe that $50 billion should go somewhere else. And maybe American attention should be trained somewhere else.
Now, Richard, which one should be addressed first? The economic aspect of the conflict or the political part? Palestinians still don't know where their capital is. They don't know which part belongs to them, which part they should, as they call it, to sell to Israel.
The Palestinians have been blocked from economic development. That's what's really kind of a joke about what your other guest is saying, is that that they have been blocked by the policies of the state of Israel. Gaza is completely surrounded. It's not allowed to trade. Completely surrounded. It's a big open-air prison. The West Bank, everything that the settlers want, they get. And every day, Palestinian olive trees are being cut down. Other orchards are being destroyed. Homes are being leveled every day. This is going on because they didn't obtain the permits. That the settlements, the Israelis set up settlements with no permit process whatsoever. When they want to, they go out and create outposts, and then those get ratified into law. The Palestinians can't do that. Palestinian businesses, everything is done to block the development of the Palestinian economy by the state of Israel. The Palestinian economy is really a colonized economy, where almost all the goods that are available, or the vast majority of them, are created in the state of Israel. Israel uses the Palestinian areas of the West Bank as an economic colony. And if the deal of the century, which is just a ridiculous title anyways, but if the deal of the century were to go into effect and money began to flow into the West Bank, where we'll really end up is in the coffers of Israeli corporations and the Israeli government, because of that colonized relationship. Understanding that the political independence, political self-determination for the Palestinians and the right to free themselves from this situation, that must come first. The idea of the economy coming first is simply a bribery scheme.
Mm-hmm. Now, Charles, regarding the venue of this event, some analysts argue that Bahrain is the easiest candidate for the holding of such a conference in the Persian Gulf, as it is competing with the UAE for a closer relation with Israel, and also because neither Qatar nor Kuwait would host something like that gathering. Do you agree?
Well, I actually went to school with the current leadership in Bahrain, and I think they are making calculated decisions. They're looking at the tea leaves, they're looking at the future, and I think they're confronting and addressing reality. Reality is that there will be a state of Israel forever. The reality is that Israel is an ally of the United
Nothing
States.
Nothing lasts
and
forever.
Will be. And
Nothing
the reality
lasts forever.
Is that economic conditions are difficult.
Mm-hmm. Now, Richard, Lebanon and Iraq have boycotted the Manama event, as Palestinians ask for. Oman has also announced it would open its embassy in the West Bank city Ramallah in continuation of the Sultan's support for the Palestinian people. Now, this while Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and some other Arab states are getting closer to Tel Aviv. So what is that factor that has polarized the Arab states as regards the Palestinian cause?
Well, basically, you can see it's mainly the monarchies that are so in the absolute monarchies where there are no democratic rights. I mean, to have this in Bahrain and say it's some step forward for democracy is so ridiculous, because the monarchy there is presiding over a very unhappy population that has been in rebellion and has been viciously suppressed, not only by the Bahraini government, but also by the Saudi military and the UAE coming in to aid them to preserve them in power. These are the most undemocratic regimes in the entire world. And they are the great champions of this deal for the U.S., and they are the ones who are trying to get as close to Israel and to the United States as they can for their own, the own interests of those royal families. I mean, people in the United States and the world have to look at this and say, this is the United States' democratic policy to favor the most undemocratic regimes that exist on the face of the earth?
Okay, I got one last question for both of you. Charles, is the Trump deal of the century set to succeed or fail? 30 seconds, please.
I think with goodwill and due inquiry, it could succeed.
And Richard?
It can only succeed if the Palestinians surrender, completely surrender, all of their aspirations, their just aspirations, and they're not going to do that. It mm-hmm. will fail.
Okay. And then we come to the end of this program. Let me thank our guests. We have Charles Ortel, political analyst, joined us from New York, and Richard Becker, author of Palestine, Israel, and the U.S. Empire, who joined us from San Francisco. Thank you for watching this debate. We'll see you soon.